Hi, welcome to Musings with Monse, a podcast where I have meaningful conversations with all kinds of artists. Musicians, poets, photographers, and other creatives share their honest stories, touching on the duality of being creative, the pure joy of making art, but also the particular struggles that come with it.
And honey, there's no way that I'll ever know. Everything about you, but oh, how I love what I do. And honey, I love what I don't know too.
In this episode, I'm talking to Emily Katz, who is an artist in many forms, including an interior designer, teacher, creative consultant, and the owner of Modern Macrame. And in case you aren't already familiar with what macrame is, it's the traditional fine art and craft of knotting, and her new book is a beautiful guide to it. This conversation is woven with so many nuggets of wisdom from Emily. From the beginning of the conversation, when she talks about striving to be intentional in everything she does, to the end when she talks about those moments that happen to all of us. And as she puts it, even if you have everything that you can imagine, you can still feel terrible. And learning to forgive yourself when you do feel that way, and remembering that we all can sometimes. She also shares some of her coping mechanisms for when she's going through a rough day or time, and tells us about her beautiful creative story. And I really loved how she calls out that, even though on the outside it might look like everything just happened and just fell into her lap, that while, yes, there was a kismet magic to her story, that it's all about what you do with it. And she really has done so much. We cover a lot of ground in this episode, and, you know, instead of me rambling on about all the things we chat about, let's just get to it. I think Emily is so inspiring and lovely, and I know you're gonna really enjoy hearing her story.
It's what I don't know to, yeah.
Hello, this is Emily.
Hey, Emily, it's Monse.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm good.
Well, so let's just get right to it. So I'd like to start off by like just sort of hearing a bit of your story. But if you could maybe tell us something besides everything, and you can talk about this too, but, you know, besides your profession, you know, who you are as a person, like what makes you you?
I love that question. What a good question, right? I don't know. What does make me me?
It's kind of hard too, right?
I don't know. No. You know, I think that that's definitely more interesting than coming up and saying all of the things that I do.
Like your resume, right?
In my normal, yeah, or how I got to where I am, yeah. Because how I got to where I am is such a long story, as it is for everybody, you know. And people ask me sometimes when they say, how long did this piece of art take you to make? And I say, oh, my whole life.
Yeah.
Because it really did, you know, everything that I've learned up until this point has made me who I am today. So I guess I would say as a person, I am striving to be intentional in everything that I do, that I really care about fostering and growing my relationships with the people in my life who support and nurture me, and that I love to cook and I love to travel.
That's great. And it's like you've kind of built yourself a perfect life for those things. You can cook and travel a lot, huh?
I don't get to cook as much as I would like to. You'd be surprised. Oh. But yeah, I can't complain. I mean, we can always complain, but I'm trying to do it less.
Yeah. I don't know why I had this vision that you were, you know, had the luxury of being able to cook a lot, but yeah, but I know you travel a lot for work. So that's
yeah,
really cool.
Sometimes you get home from a long day of using your brain and all you want to do is eat something fast and
totally,
you know,
totally. Yeah. Yeah. And you just got back from, or maybe not just, but you recently got back from being away on the road for a book tour for a long time, right?
Yeah, that's right. Last year, when my book Modern Macrame came out, I went on a 3-month long driving around the United States, 12,000 mile, 50 location book workshop tour.
Wow. How was that?
Well, it was everything that I had hoped and I had fantasized for years and years and years about going on the road and doing that kind of tour and seeing the United States. And I connected with over 500 people and was able to teach macrame to over 500 people over the course of those 3 months.
That's incredible. Like, what a reach, you know, to be able to do
that. It was really incredible. And I came home just totally exhausted.
Oh my gosh, I bet.
And burnout. And I actually talked to a lot of my musician friends who tour.
Yes.
And just said, oh my God, I feel like I'm so
you get
depressed.
It now. Yes, the post-tour depression is real.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
It gave me some comfort to know that it wasn't just me.
No, it's true. It's actually funny because, you know, most of the people I interview on the podcast are musicians.
Yeah.
Since that's really my world. And I almost always ask them that question. So do you get the post-tour depression? Because, you know, I just from all my friends being musicians, you know, I know it's such a real thing. You know, you don't have to be a musician. It's just kind of like having that go, 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 go life, or, you know, the spells of it, of like times like where you're just really on and all this adrenaline's going and then you come back and it's like, woo.
Yeah, I really equated it to being a freight train that was trying to stop on a dime.
Right.
And we have this expectation as creative people that we're always going to be producing mm-hmm. the thing.
Right.
And that if we're not producing the thing, then we're somehow failing. And so to come home and to be completely stripped of all energy and all creative output because I needed to really just sleep for 2 months
yes.
and hibernate. And I didn't really give myself... I didn't give myself the permission to do it to the extent that I think I really needed it.
Yeah.
But I recognize that that is the expectation. And hopefully next time I'll build in a little bit more downtime.
Yeah. It's also probably like the pressure you put on yourself too, right? Because like...
100%.
Yeah. Like on the outside, no one's looking at you and saying like, oh, like why aren't you, you know, producing another book immediately or whatever, you know, it is. But maybe that's how you feel. Cause you're like, oh, I just put so much of my heart and energy into this thing and being on the road and sharing and then coming back from that. I mean, I can't imagine it wouldn't affect you.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring up, just because it's such a beautiful story, if you're willing to share about your reconnection with your mom and how that brought you to, you know, really what you're doing for creative living now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really the keystone of this journey and of my creative story, which was really unexpected. My parents divorced when I was 9 and I turned 30 in 2012 and my boyfriend Adam and I were invited to the East Coast. We were going to a wedding and we were going to hang out with some friends. We live in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
So it was, you know, heading across the country. And my mom lives in Connecticut and I really hadn't seen much of her for about 20 years. We had connected a couple of times here and there, but really we didn't have any kind of true relationship. And she found out that we were heading to the East Coast because I had mentioned to her mom that I was maybe coming. And anyway, it passed through the grapevine.
Yeah.
And so we went to go visit her. Leading up to that, I had talked to my dad about it and he lives here in Portland and I was telling him that I was sort of nervous about the experience. And he told me that my mom had made macrame in the 70s and shared this little bit of her story. And the reason that he told me that was because I had expressed some interest in learning how to make macrame plant hangers.
Wow.
And he said, you know, she sold the plant hangers that she made in the 70s at the salon that her mom used to go to raise money to buy a guitar. So she bought a beautiful 1976 Martin acoustic guitar with her money that she made by selling macrame.
Wow.
And so at this point, when I'm hearing this story, I'm already, you know, I'm 30 years old. I had already had two businesses of my own, two sort of fashion-related businesses. I had made a lot of art. I had had a band. I had done lots of different kinds of creative things in my life. And so when I heard this from my mom, it sparked this moment of, oh my gosh, she also has this entrepreneurial spirit. I didn't know that. Like, how cool that we connected in that way. So I reached out to her and asked her if she would teach me when we came to visit, because I figured, well, if we can do something together, maybe it'll change how I feel and I won't be so nervous about visiting. So we got off the bus and we went, she picked us up at the bus station in Hartford, and we first went to do some grocery shopping and run some errands, trying to find the material to make the macrame plant hangers in the way that I had dreamed them up in my mind. And we had a really hard time finding the right rope. And finally we found something that worked, and we went back to our house, and I have two half sisters, and at the time they were young teenagers, and they were in the kitchen baking vegan cookies.
Yum.
And my mom and I were using the knobs of the cabinets on the kitchen cabinets as the tension for our macrame making. And Adam was sitting on the floor cross-legged playing the guitar that my mom bought with macrame. Mm. And it was this really beautiful full circle moment of being very present and being very in the moment and really being together, being really truly together in that moment.
Yeah. That's such a beautiful story, because it's like, you know, a lot of us have complex relationships with our parents. And I just love the underlying thing. It's like, there's something that you could both sort of bond over or hold on to that, you know, like if you didn't have that, you know, who knows, like, maybe where the relationship would have been. But it's just like, I don't know, just that it's like multi-layered, you know, relationships, and that there's like something binding you together. I don't know if that makes any sense. That's kind of came out wrong, but.
No, it definitely makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, up until that point, I had no thought in my mind. It never occurred to me that she and I would be able to have a relationship.
Right.
Like, it never, there was just too much heartache around her leaving. Usually it's the dad that leaves.
Yeah.
I know that's not always true, but.
But it's the stories you hear more so.
Those
often.
Are the stories that you hear, is more that the dad leaves and that the mom stays. And she really, she split and left all of us and started a new family without telling us. So we had a lot of pain around that relationship. The fact that we had such a nice time together, and that she gave me this incredible gift that is now, I mean, that I have taken and ran with and ran very fast and very far and very hard with.
Yes. It was like a little offering, almost like from the universe or her, you know, and both sort of like, I don't know, like a softening to your relationship. So that's.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really was. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Sometimes when I tell my story, I find myself feeling a little bit self-conscious, not about the vulnerability or the intimacy of the exchange or the experience, but sometimes when it comes out of my mouth, it feels to me like when people hear it, they think, oh, well, everything just fell into her lap.
Mm.
Because in a way it kind of did, you know, in a way, this connection with my mom, and then it was featured in a Japanese magazine. I was teaching macrame, and I ended up teaching these Japanese magazine editors in my living room. And it was this really incredible, crazy day. And then I started teaching around the country. And then here I am with a book and employees and a rope line and all of this stuff. And sometimes it seems to me that it just all happens.
Mm.
You know, when you hear a story like that, you think, oh, well, that would never happen to me because here's this perfect experience that this person had that, you know, how could I ever find that thing for myself? And I think I just want to say that yes, it was really this magical kismet of a moment, and
yes,
it's about what you do with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for the explanation point on that, because that's a really, that's a really good point. It is what you do with it. That's a good message. Since you do have so many, I feel like you're so connected in the creative world, in different facets of it. And like, as you mentioned, you have a lot of musician friends too, which I know because we have mutual friends. But like, so could you tell me maybe, I'm just curious about if you could tell me a couple people or one person whose creativity really moves you in any area?
Oh, that's a good question. It's so hard because there's so many people in my life who have supported me in my creative practices who, I mean, I couldn't have done any of the things that I do on my own. It really does take a village. You know, I would say that just kind of in general, I'm really inspired by people who make music their careers. I still am holding out for someday maybe picking it back up again. And so sometimes when I go see live music, I think I get that little bit of spark. Sometimes I'm like, oh God, I totally could do what that person was doing.
Right. That's all, in my opinion, signs that it's something that wants to come out of you. So
it will at some point again.
Yeah.
But gosh, I mean, I think that really it's more than just one person.
Yeah.
That it's people who are dedicated to the curiosity of their craft.
Oh, totally. That's great. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't, you know, I have a friend here in Portland, her name's Annie Parker, and she and I've worked together a ton of times, and she's a stylist, but she's also an activist. Mm. And, she's really shown me a lot about how to make a difference in the world. And she's working on a big project right now, that I hope gets to come out into the world. And she worked and styled and worked on this cookbook called Cooking Up Trouble. And all of the proceeds go to Planned Parenthood. Mm. And she worked on it with a photographer friend of ours who lives in the Santa Barbara. And I personally have never defined myself as an activist. And so it's something that I definitely aspire to be more conscious about in the way that I affect the world.
Yeah.
And so, I think doing it through food is a really inspiring way to connect with people. And she is also just really good cook, and she lives really close to me. So I get to eat her good food all the time too.
Bonus.
So that's one thing. That's one person who's in my sphere, who's doing something inspiring that I look up to what she's doing. And I know that it will never be my exact path, but I appreciate that there are people out there who are doing that and fighting the good fight.
Oh, totally. Me too. That's awesome. Well, so you've been, like we mentioned, you were on a really long book tour, and you do workshops, you teach workshops a lot, from what I gather. And I was wondering if you could share one of your most memorable experiences in that, in teaching a workshop, or just something that happened on the book tour.
Yeah, definitely. Well, okay. I have two.
Great.
The first one was actually, I know I started this off saying that I got really burnt out after my book tour, but one of my favorite moments from my book tour was actually a series of moments, which was over the course of 3 months, my friend Caitlin, who was on the tour with me, she and I kept a tally that we went swimming in a body of water somewhere, either a lake or a pool or a river or a pond or something, 15 times in the course of 3 months.
Wow.
Which, being kind of a little bit of a workaholic, even living in Portland, where it's only a 30-minute drive to the river in the heat of summer.
Yep.
I find myself like only going, like I went inner tubing one time this year, you know, that it's so easy to not take advantage of those things. So I felt like that was a huge success that we went to that many bodies of water and swam.
That's amazing. That's so
cool. That was really amazing. And then this wasn't on my tour, but it was in September of 2 years ago. I taught at this retreat in New Hampshire called Squam Artist Retreats. And Squam is kind of more tailored towards knitters and other artists, other kind of fiber arts in general. It started more knitting community based, but the organizers brought me on to do macrame. And I was like, well, how am I going to get there? I mean, you know, the usual thing would be you fly in, you rent a car, and you drive. It was a 3-hour drive, and they weren't paying me a lot of money. And I was feeling a little bit nervous about how I was going to afford to make the trip there. And so I actually decided to reach out to my mom, who lives in Connecticut, as I said. Yeah. And she picked me up at the airport, and we drove to New Hampshire together. And she and I stayed in a cabin. And she came to one of my workshops that I taught, and we're sitting in a circle in this beautiful old barn, and it's summer and it's warm, and or it's September, but it was warm day. And I'm telling my story, which I shared with you just now, but it's longer usually the version that I tell in my workshops. Yeah. But I'm telling my story to all, I think it was maybe about 25 women, and my mom's sitting there, and she's hearing me share this part of my story about, you know, the ache of her having left and this reconnection and what it meant to me. And at the end of telling my story, I said to everyone, and here's my mom sitting in the circle with all of you. And the experience that day was so special to hear the feedback from so many of those women who had also experienced some kind of loss or were inspired to reconnect with their somebody, mother, daughter, whatever. And just to be able to share that space with them was really, really, really extra special.
That's incredible. And I think you just touched on something that's, you know, really important at the crux of true connection with people is being able to be real and vulnerable, you know, and just being like, okay, yeah, like this had this huge effect on my life and I was deeply wounded and hurt. You know, but you can say that to somebody when you're also in the process of sort of healing, you know, it, and think that brings you much closer. And that, what an incredible thing to share that, to be able to share that with her right there and with all those people. Oh, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, she was really proud of me in that moment. And it made me feel proud too, to have come so far with that gift that she gave me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, sort of along the lines of, since we're talking about workshops and macrame, what is something other than macrame that you can get really lost in?
Oh, man. Well, whenever I'm having a hard day, I really like to go to cooking. It's always a thing that makes me feel better if I'm just feeling down or low or grumpy or something. I love cooking. I'm not good at baking, but I love cooking. I think another thing is, spending time with people who are really nourishing to me. I have a few friends who really just help inspire that childlike wonder. I think that's something that is really, really wonderful, to just sit and talk with people who you care about. Going dancing, I love to. I think it's easy to get lost in that. But as far as like a creative practice, I think there's so many different avenues that I've gone down.
You have a lot of talents.
Painting, drawing. I'm getting married this year.
Congrats.
Thank you. And it's very possible that I'll be making my wedding dress, and so I'm kind of looking forward to getting lost in the process of doing some lace making and really delicate, intimate, slow embroidery and things like that.
Oh, That just sounds amazing. I can't wait to see. Yeah. I hope I see pictures on Instagram.
Yes, for sure.
That's awesome.
And then exercise. That's probably the other thing. And I have never really had a good relationship with exercise, but I've, you know, after both my parents had some health issues, I was like, hey, Emily, got to get it together. I've been taking bar classes.
Yes, I love bar. That's my thing too. It's so fun.
So fun. And then the other thing I've loved that I've tried is aerial yoga.
Ooh, I haven't done that yet, but I have a hunch I would love it.
It's That's so awesome. Fun. It really feels like play. And then you still kind of can barely move the next day, which
That's
is
awesome.
Kind of the best.
It kind of is the best, right? Because you feel like you've actually done something.
Yeah.
Well, this question you might kind of give me a similar answer to, but I want to ask it anyway. You know, when you're having a hard day or a month or year, what has been in your personal toolkit to help you move through it?
Well, I think giving myself forgiveness. Being able to forgive myself for those moments, because they happen to everybody. And I think that there's a reason that they show up. But coping mechanisms, yes, cooking is one, going for a walk is one, recognizing sometimes that it is a chemical issue. Mm-hmm. I had an experience. I did a large scale macrame installation for this spa in Portland called Knot Springs, and part of my payment was to have a couple of years of membership. And so that's where I go to the gym, and they have hot tubs and a sauna, and it's just really the most luxurious, amazing thing that I get to do on the regular. And I, one morning I woke up, I went to bar, and then after bar, it's like 9 a.m. and I'm sitting in the hot tub overlooking the city. And this woman who works there, who's really sweet, she brought me over a piece of chocolate. Mm. And I'm having the most beautiful morning on paper, and I'm just feeling like such shit on the inside. And I just remembered thinking in that moment that this is not something like this is a real like chemical depression moment.
Yes.
And can I just accept that that is what it is at this moment and not beat myself up about it?
That is
because
so
there
big.
There was nothing wrong in my life. It was like I was sitting in a spa and a beautiful woman was handing me chocolate. I mean, life doesn't really get that much better than that. But even if you have everything that you want, quote unquote, you have everything that you imagine, you've dreamt up, and you can still feel terrible.
That's so important to remind people of that, you know, because I think you really hit on it when you said like kind of forgiving yourself, because we all, no matter what our life circumstances, like we all are going to have moments like that. Especially if you have a heart, you're going to feel that, you know, or a head, you know, it's just like you said, a chemical thing. And just, I think reminding ourselves that we're going to move through this, and it's, you know, it could just be literally just a moment, or it could be a couple days or whatever. But yeah, that's just super, important to remember and not to beat yourself up about it. You know, it's just part of being human.
Yep. And it happens to everyone on some different level.
Yeah.
You know, people who you think are wildly successful can be really deeply unhappy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So next, I just want to ask sort of towards the end of the podcast, I do like the whole favorites thing, because I love to hear what your favorite things are. All right. So how about a favorite album or song?
So Adam and I spent the other day going through songs to have some of our friends maybe sing at our wedding. And I guess I could tell you, oh my gosh, no, maybe I shouldn't tell you. I was going to say I could tell you what I think are, okay, I'll tell you what isn't going to be the first dance at our wedding, but it was a runner up.
Yes.
Which is This Must Be the Place by the Talking Heads.
Oh, that's awesome. It'll be at your wedding. It just won't be the
It won't be the first dance, it will be at the wedding for sure.
That's great. It's
such a sweet song.
That's great.
I mean, as far as love songs go, I think that it's really very sweet.
Is he a big, does he love music as well?
Yes, he does love music. He toured as a musician for 10 years.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
It's all connected.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. That was his life for a long time.
Wow. Wow.
But I mean, God, music is, there's so much amazing music out there.
Okay. How about a favorite book?
Favorite book. Okay. Well, we just Marie Kondo'd our entire collection of books. And so this is easier for me to answer because I literally picked up every single one of my books and said, does this spark joy? Does this spark joy? Does this spark joy? And I think that still one of my all-time favorite books is A Jitterbug Perfume by Tom Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love that book.
And how about a favorite place?
A favorite place? Well, sitting on my couch with my dog and my man is definitely one of my favorite places.
That's awesome. That's so cool. And you really curated.
Maybe anywhere where the ocean is warm. And
I lived for a short time in Denver, Colorado, and it's beautiful there, but I got really kind of depressed not being close to the ocean.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do it again. I have to live near the ocean. So yeah, I feel that.
So many places.
Yeah. I know you've traveled a lot too. So it's pretty cool when you say one of your favorite places is home, you know? So
yeah.
And how about, how about a favorite memory?
A favorite memory. Well, I mean that Friday afternoon walking up to see Adam through the crowd of people, that was definitely one of my favorite memories. But favorite memory. In 2011, I had kind of quit doing fashion, but I had an art show that was up at a gallery in a small gallery in Portland. And I was doing a lot of freehand embroidered drawings on tulle. So it was sheer, lots of layers of embroidery, and they were very whimsical drawings. And I decided as part of the art show that I was also going to do a fashion show. And so I made 12 or 13 looks, dresses and separates and outfits. And I had a lot of friends come and help me sew beads into them and crystals and different kinds of patterns. And I had this, I hired this woman to help coordinate the runway show. And I had a really dear friend of mine who used to play music with me write poems based on her dreams that then became the inspiration for the whole collection. And she read poetry and we sold out this gallery. People paid, $15 or something to come and watch the show. And the feeling that I got at the end of that runway show, where, the women who did the hair and makeup, the women who modeled, who really they volunteered. I mean, all of these people volunteered their time and energy to make this night happen. And I have never before or since felt that just overflowing beaming of accomplishment and love and support. I remember walking down the runway at the end with, arm in arm with some of the people who modeled, some of the women who have since become close friends, just tears streaming down my face and just the most, it was the most incredible experience.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. This was such a beautiful conversation and I'm glad we finally got to kind of meet.
Yes, for sure. Thank you for having me. And thank you for asking such great questions.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for such beautiful, truthful answers.
Yeah, of course. You're welcome.
Okay, have a good night.
You too.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Scenes with Monse, Artists and Their Honest Stories, is audio produced by the amazing Erin Mooring, and the beautiful theme music you hear is by Heather Maloney.